Sånn, er det, hører du noe nå? Det var litt mye lyd her. Ja, vi kan telle til 3, 4, 5, 6 og 7 og 8. Hallo. Nils, du har ikke noe å drikke et eller annet sted? Jeg tror jeg kan komme til å prate meg tørr her hvis jeg ikke passer meg. Av hva som helst. Anything. Hvis den gir seg. Ok. Backup-plan, altså. Fy, vi rakker. Ja, greit.
Okay, hello everybody and welcome to the fourth NIST lecture of 2013. Today's topic is on the effect and the cloud on business information security threats, a quite applied topic compared to the one we had a week ago, but that's also a pleasure. I'm happy to see that we have a fair number of people present in Eureka today, even if also a bit of NISLAB is tucked up in the snowstorm in Finse. We have a couple of survivors who has made it back, and we are glad to see you back in Gjøvik. It's also a pleasure to introduce today's speaker, business developer Anders Føyen from Microsoft, who has a feeling with what's going on out in enterprises and some of the challenges they're facing. So then I leave the word to you, Anders.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We mostly refer to this problem as bring your own device, mostly known in IT, or the people I speak to the most at work, as bring your own disaster. So bring your own disaster is what happens when everybody brings everything to work and starts working away and expects IT to work the same way as they do on the stuff that they have at home. The effects on business information security is basically easiest to explain with what's happening when, for instance, Statoil, a big Norwegian company, collaborates with their peers to keep the North Sea clean of oil spills. That requires everybody in the oil ecosystem to talk to each other, and so they have a cloud application to help them do that. And that way they fork over username and password to a cloud service for all top management and personnel in the North Sea. And so when IT calls them and says, you know, is this really safe? Are you sending your usernames and passwords to every service that comes along that you really want to use? And then the service people that they're purchasing this from says, nah, yeah, it's okay. But you know, when you do this a lot of times and you have people who may be spies or people who want to infiltrate the organization or people who have bad intentions, it's really hard to take away their username and password. Once they're in, they're in. So you can't sort of administer this stuff. So people are getting very, very anxious to get a grip on how to take care of people who use services, not just Facebook and Twitter and consumer services, but real serious business services, because we don't have security mechanisms to keep devices and services in sync. And that's sort of the challenge in a nutshell. What I'm going to talk about today is a little bit on the threat picture as we see it when we monitor a lot of computers. We have about 600,000 computers that report pretty much real-time what they are infected with and what the threat picture is, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And then a lot of what we advise organizations to do with this, because it's an accelerating problem. The speed of this thing is so fast that we have not really seen the tip of the iceberg yet. So we'll look a little bit on the trends, and of course I work in Microsoft, so we'll do a little bit of examples on how to strategize and how to think about this threat and how to tackle it as good as we can. The reason why we're doing computing is because it has tremendous value. So I'm trying to bring a couple of perspectives as well on sort of what is the business value of this consumerization of IT, which could ultimately be called computerization of everything. We think that 20 years from now, or 15, 20 years from now, you can't buy stuff that is not on the internet. So what we think about as internet or enterprise computing today, in the future it will be internet computing. So enterprise computing is just a subset. So if you all look for work in enterprises, this is really the problem space you're going to be dealing with 5, 10, 15 years from now. So it should be an interesting topic. Let's see. If you look back 20 years, threats used to be fairly easy. You know, there you could just basically put a lock outside of this room and nothing would leave the building. It's become a little bit more distributed and a little bit more complex over the last 20 years, but there's still 300,000 of these hanging out there. There's about 3 million servers connected to this on the enterprise networks in the 1,000 or 1,500 largest companies in the world. And then there's about 3 to 6 billion devices on the internet trying to talk with these enterprise resources. So that's basically the global scope of the problem. It's a lot of hardware talking to each other over the network. And it's a lot of information being exchanged. The picture that most of the people who own these assets is from Hollywood. And so we used to think of this is the threat, you know, it's hackers. It's kids, whiz kids, who know a lot about computers, who can break in and do, you know, fairly dangerous thing. This guy nearly started World War III, remember? I think the sequel is out this year, isn't it? So War Games 2 is on. But if you have seen this movie, it's a kid who basically uses chewing gum and metal paper to hack into a mainframe computer and basically starts World War III. Because he wants to play a game. So it's just a benevolent hacker, but he manages to do real harm. And he also saves the world and the planet and so on, of course. So that could be the hero of this movie. But today the picture is somewhat more complicated. Really, we are looking at an Intel graphics, fairly recent, about what happens on the internet in 1 minute. And it's thousands of services that basically is relaying information of all types to something like the number of population, number of devices. So 6 billion devices on the internet today. By 2015, we expect that number to double. So when you have that many devices and that many services integrating with enterprise information systems, it's a pretty busy picture. The trends driving this, if you could look at what people are using in terms of form factors, the phone is the biggest driver, the tablet is second, and then in the next wave it's going to be a lot of sensors that comes into this picture as well. Wearable computing like watches, wristbands, stuff like that, and that you also want to integrate into enterprise systems. A big trend is what really is work. 100 years ago, work used to be you make food and you make clothes for you and your family, and that consumes most of your working hours for about 80-90% of the population. When I grew up, work was having an education and go to work in the society, in the industrialized society. But farming and industrialized society work is less than 10% of work today. So what really is work? The stuff that you can apply for and go out and make a living really is communication and collaboration. McKinsey, I'm going to show you a link later to the study, says that in the Western society today, almost 60% of work is really interactions between humans, and mostly collaboration, communication, coordination, those types of activities. And a lot of that can be done by a telephone. So social computing 1.0 was really invented by Graham Bell and implemented around 1860. So Facebook and social media and so on is really just a new topic that you can have more channels than just the phone. And you have increasingly number of channels that is able to do communication and collaboration. The third trend in this is something that's economically a big factor and pretty invisible to most people here. You probably use services like Google, Gmail, SkyDrive, stuff like that, which is consumer services hosted in the cloud. But what enterprises haven't studied closely the last 5 years is that cloud computing is basically cutting cost of computing by something like 90% or 95%. Cost of computing is power, that's the biggest component. It's people, so it's 100% automated, and it's space. If you have to buy a building, it's expensive, so they basically operate in very cramped spaces, and they're designed not to take space. So cloud computing is basically automating everything that used to be a data center. And if you take the Norwegian government, they use today something around 1,000 data centers, whilst Google and Microsoft and Amazon, between them, have less than 50 data centers. So you can basically operate 6 billion people on 50 data centers. And today, our architecture in the enterprise is that we think we need basically 20 times that number of data centers for 2% of the population. So that's the big trend that is really happening. It's happening so fast that enterprises haven't really seen what this is. And it's going to really affect them long term. And these three trends are enforcing each other. And that's why the speed of this thing is coming on so hard. For the people living in this world, it really is a work-life blur. You work at home, you work at work, and anywhere in between. And this blurring of life and work is brilliant for employers because they get a lot of free hours that they can use their employees for less money. They get more out of each employee because they can work everywhere they are. The bad thing for employees is that they have a hard time turning off work. So today you're either overworked or you're out of work. That seems to be a very binary situation. And it's basically if my generation learned that you go to school and you get a job and then you hold on to it. So I held on to my job for a long time. But these days you find your passion and then you learn everything about it and you follow it. And then you're as long as you're on and you follow your passion, you are pretty good at what you're doing. So the reason or the value of this consumerization of IT is that people get used to using a lot of tools. They spend lots of hours learning how to use their phone, using search, using services, using computers, tablets to do their work. And then when they come to work and enterprises say, don't use that stuff, use our stuff. What you're basically saying is stop using your brain, which is why they got hired in the first place. So this work-life blur, when you start to get really people who are really good at using their information tools, it's really hard to stop them getting into the enterprise. You really, really, really want them because they are good at what they're doing. So then if you look at the threat picture, I didn't find one from internal Microsoft resources, but this is from a Unisys paper in 2010, gathered from IDC data, or the study is done by IDC, and it's sponsored by Unisys, rather, that looks at the challenge. And it's really then looking at the rise of mobile devices and applications. The application space is probably the bigger. If you look at the application space, 70% of the time when you use your mobile phone today, and if you're a serious user, is spent in apps. It's not spent in a browser, it's spent in apps. And when 70% is spent in apps, that means the expectation that what is computing for someone who's good at it is that it does exactly what it's supposed to do when you want it. And it's kind of a throwaway interface. And apps used to have a lifespan of applications on a PC, maybe live 3 years, 6 years, 10 years. But an app live how long? It's a throwaway piece of thing. You know, it's uploaded 2,000 apps to the app stores daily. So the number of apps is just exploding. And so how do you secure this environment that is accessing all of these services on the backside? Dynamism in trying to get a picture of what is really accessing what and fix it down in a secure manner is really, really hard. And then we talk about cloud computing, but it's not really one cloud. It's as many clouds as there are data centers. So it could be your data center, a hoster's data center, or somebody who sells you software as a service data center, or it could be Amazon Web Services or Azure or other web services that you can rent. And this picture is also very dynamic. And they have different security models and different access models. And then to be able to get a picture of what is flowing in and out of your enterprise in this picture is getting increasingly hard. Just to make the picture easier, you have a regulatory environment, which is really, really stale. So in the US, what goes for law has really not been tested all that much, so it's a lot of interpretations going on. So the legal environment is 20 years outdated and really lagging behind. But there's a lot of new compliance requirements coming for companies that makes them really, really nervous and makes your work as a security professional a lot harder because you have to report on this. Then the criminals are no longer kids who are looking for games on your computers. They are seasoned criminals who actually want to get all your information. And today the common knowledge is that every perimeter of security in an enterprise has been broken. So you operate as if everybody sees everything. That is basically the safest mode of operation. If you're dealing with sensitive data, don't do it. Don't put it on the network. So the criminals are getting even more sophisticated. Not that they actually break through the hardest places in your infrastructure, but that they are much better at attacking the weak link. And where do you think the weak link is? That's a question you could ponder a little bit, and we'll discuss a little bit later. So if you look at the threats, this is a threat picture from the Security Intelligence Report that Microsoft publishes annually. You can look at it on our website, and it has a pretty good update from what happens on those 600 million computers that we monitor basically in a continuous matter. And we see that the stuff that is actually increasing is potentially unwanted software. Stuff gets installed because people click on things. Basically, a third of the computers in the enterprise have stuff like that, that you don't really know what is. And it's on the increase, together with Trojans. So this is a pretty ugly picture. And that's just from this blue bar down here. You see the blue, the 600 million PCs, is a pretty stable entity going forward. But what is happening right now is that the number of phones is increasing, and they are getting all of the critical information emails, voice calls, and they are getting all the line of business apps, because that's the next way. People want to be able, on their iPads, on their phones, to be able to access mission critical business information. And that is the happening right now. So everybody's asking to have it, and IT is really, really scrambling to deliver on that. So what does this do to the threat picture? Well, more or less, the one mainframe has become a little bit more complex today, but this is a one-way street to a much larger and much more fuzzy picture of where are the security boundaries? What are you trying to secure? Where are you looking for threats? And if you look at a device type or an information type, or this piece in the puzzle could be a service or a group of services. But I think if you look at this piece and you think about if you were an attacker, where would you attack? Would you attack in the middle of a piece where the defense strategies would be known? Or would you attack in the fringes where stuff is joined together? So the real security picture here is how do you defend a picture that is really gleaned together? And there's a lot of edges where you can inject new types of attack, and it's very dynamic. It's not stable at all. These pieces are changing very dynamically and with an increasing rate of change. So that is some of the threat pictures that we are looking at. There's no one single solution to this, and there's no one supplier or knowledge person who can help you fix all of this. But I think we should look a little bit on the benefit side to see why we are still willing to operate in this picture. And this is really a one-way street. There is no stopping what we call the power to the people. Really, there is tremendous value in people who are really good at using information tools, and who are really good at using services, and who can apply this in their work. So, if you think at it from an enterprise perspective. The IT manager in my house is my 21-year-old son, and he thinks I'm an idiot. And I've been doing nothing but IT for 35 years. This stuff is so easy to him. You know, he sets up his proxy servers, he configures the firewalls, he configures the routers to make his Xbox perform faster with the gaming he's doing, stuff like that. And these are the kids who get into the enterprise, and they apply for work, and they get a device from IT, and they say, I'm going to use this for work, and you can't fix access to these other services? What's wrong with you? I can do this in 5 minutes, and you've spent 5 years doing this. You know, so the tone of the discussion that this new generation who's entering the workplace now has toward IT is really condescending, and they really have no patience to work with the complexity that is enterprise IT today, and the slowness with which it moves. You know, when they're responding to stuff. So the people who are really losing face here is the people who work in IT and work their butts off to keep this secure and keep it running and to make it dynamic and respond to people's wishes. So because they're getting no respect. These 20-year-olds can fix it in 5 minutes, and they have no understanding as to why IT can't fix it. So if you talk to the managers then, if you don't talk to IT, they are sort of getting this picture. I don't know how many of you have been to the military service. I used to be there once upon a time, and I actually did a ski race on equipment provided by the military. These are called NATO planks. It's very efficient skiing stuff, and you're provided with an AG3 to shoot, and you're supposed to do biathlon. You know, you go skiing with a backpack, and you shoot down some stuff. Now, this bring-your-own-device stuff is, if you could have people who had, say, 20 years experience, like this guy with skis and his own device, his own gun, who would you bring to war? Would you take this guy on your team, or would you take me in this configuration? Management tends to pick these guys, you know. They look a little bit more trained and ready to accomplish serious stuff. And so this is really the picture that the business side is looking at. They don't care, and they don't understand why IT can't provide more modern and more updated gear for the tremendous amount of money that they pour into IT today. And so the benefits are pretty high. If you look at the training costs, if you didn't know how to ski and didn't know how to shoot and had never touched the stuff before, and you have, say, 30,000 employees, the training cost is pretty staggering. We did training for 3 months at boot camp, and if you train 30,000 people for 3 months and you calculate 1,000 kroners per hour, $100 per hour, it's pretty expensive. So getting people to be better at stuff, to use their gear, is really, really expensive. And that's really the enterprise way of teaching people how to become better at their gear. But for the first time now, people can buy employees who actually have 10,000 hours of training using computers and phones. And that's really the value. If you calculate the value of having 10,000 hours of training in something, it's almost immense. And that is what you're competing with. So you really, really want to enable this bring your own device scenario. So that's the value piece. So I have a little funny movie that we have made to sort of take this into the IT department, because they are pretty disillusioned right now. They have a really hard time tackling this picture, and so this is really a movie that we have made for IT people to say, come on, it's not that bad, we have to deal with it, so let's go. So this is a little communication piece. Could be a little communication piece.
So, it's only 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and you're ready to ditch the IT field for a less frustrating career, like a lumberjack or a piranha dentist. There's a new girl who thought it would be smart to upload sensitive legal docs onto a cloud app so she could work on them from home. Sharon from finance is hovering over your desk, waiting for her turn. She bought the new robot phone that reads your email out loud while it makes your morning coffee. and she wants you to set up her company email on it. Then there's Jimbo from marketing, who wants to know if he could trade in his 3-month-old tablet he just had to have for one of those new MagicPad Savior of the World punch screen deals, which is definitely not on the list of approved devices. And while you're trying to explain these things to Jimbo, who just keeps saying, "Man, but the punch screen is so rad," you're thinking, seriously, aren't you the one who's supposed to be making the IT decisions around here? Isn't it your job to provide employees the technology they need to do their jobs well, while factoring in things like budgets and security? At least, that's how it used to be. People showed up in the morning, used whatever technology you provided them, did their jobs, and went home. And everyone started over the next morning. Things are changing. People have access to better and cheaper personal technology than they've ever had before. And technology isn't just changing how people work in general. It's actually blurring the lines between work and life by giving folks more influence and choice over how and where they work and what technology they use to get things done. This is consumerization, and it's impacting you and your company. Your job is to keep things safe, secure, and working properly. So how do you handle the risks that come with consumerization? Answer, you embrace the risks responsibly, because the resulting opportunities are even greater. Consumerization is an opportunity for you to help people work in ways that better suit their jobs and their personalities. It's an opportunity to provide people with technology that makes them more productive and makes their work more enjoyable. Last time we checked, both of those things are good for business. So you have a choice. You can choose to resist consumerization, or you can choose to embrace consumerization responsibly and become a spearhead for the change it brings within your organization. Consumerization is happening, and it's good. Your organization becomes more productive with more choice. Jimbo is happy, and you're the hero. So if you're willing to say yes to the opportunities that consumerization brings, Microsoft is here to help.
Blah, blah, blah. Advertising is good. So that's the communication movie. You know, give it up. You know, resistance is futile. Consumerization is happening. Deal with it. So really, what is the challenge that they have to deal with? And 80% of the time, they just keep the lights on whatever is in the IT department today. That's basically the 80-20 rule in IT today. And this comes on top. And the most important piece is enabling social way of working within the enterprise. Because people who have 10,000 hours of training doing stuff in social media or social networks, they expect to get work done the same way that they get work done in social media or social computing. So instrumenting everything internally in the enterprise is going to take 20 years, but that's going on now. So it's really the purpose is to enable work to get done the way people know how to when you start hiring new people. Then the second is to try to manage the information. It's really an information management exercise to deal with all the unstructured information and the structured information, that you can really take care of what's critical and really enable all that is not that critical to happen in every channel possible. The really hard stuff is to update this military equipment to good consumer grade experiences. It used to be the good computers were bought by enterprises because they could afford it. Now all the good computers are in your pockets. Basically, a phone today trails a computer with 3 to 5 years in computing power, and a lot of the computing devices in enterprises are, guess what, 3 to 5 years old. So that's some of the problem. Then this is really not a technology issue. It's really a cost issue. Where are the hidden costs? How do you prioritize the benefit, get the benefits, and how do you prioritize so you don't get hit by the cost? And what is, you know, the biggest cost? What is the biggest risk? There's a lot of them. I jumped a little bit in my chair that saw the statistic that 12,000 laptops are lost in airports every week. Every week? Then that's just laptops. What about all the other stuff? No. Is that the most important vector? Seems like people don't really care that much. So if they don't care about their expensive hardware devices, what happens to information that they don't really think about? Is it stored in the cloud? Is it stored on the network? Is it business critical? Is it uncritical? How do you get people aware of this issue who work in the enterprise? The audience participation piece starts here, I think. Do you have a... Could you hand out the microphone if people have thought about the question? People who are criminals, they like to attack the weakest link. Where is the weakest link in this picture? If you were a criminal, where would you attack? And we have a taker. Maybe you could hand her the microphone, Nils, so we can have a perspective.
People are always the weakest link. People are always the weakest link in this security.
People are always the weakest link. And where are the people?
The people nowadays
down here?
Everywhere in social.
Yeah. So people are always the weakest link. That was the easy question. Now what about the hard stuff? Where is the information that these weakest links are using? Which area would you secure the most? Which area would you try to get a handle on and really monitor and really protect if you were to build defenses? Say you got 1 million kroner and you could build defenses. Where would you build them to protect against the weakest link? We have another taker.
I think I will still protect the data center because that has the most... most information, but of course I have to keep an eye on what is on the apps and what is on the devices as well.
It's pretty hard. It's not an easy picture. I think all our generation would say is we know the data that we have in our data center, so that's what we would try to protect. But trust me, the friction now to use consumer services and consumer devices to do critical computing is very low. So most likely all enterprises have a lot of business critical information on Dropbox, SkyDrive, G Drive, everywhere, because it's just so easy to exchange information, sharing it on free consumer services. So making the internal services friction free is actually probably one of the better defenses, because people migrate to the free services and unsecure services because it's a high friction to use it inside. The best defense could be to build down the defenses on the inside while you still keep the monitoring and management of the internal information. So that's one way of thinking. But all of these areas are interesting and all of these areas need thought and you need a plan to tackle them. A lot, if the people are the weakest links, then you have to study a little bit about what are the most common scenarios. What is the time split? Where do people use what type of devices for what purpose? And this is one way of categorizing it, but I think almost 30 to 60% would be in the top two. The top two categories is a lot of unstructured information that is just keeping up with what other people are doing, checking calendars, checking mail, looking on websites, communicating, instant messaging, phone calls, that type of stuff, and stay entertained. Of course, nobody's monitoring if you're staying entertained or not at work these days, but it's the old smoke break and coffee break has been replaced by people who look at outside services and websites instead, like Twitter and Facebook and that kind of thing. But understanding the work scenarios and where the value to the business is probably get a number on those categories and see what it's worth to you. And then it used to be that your protection strategy was sort of handled around devices, and it used to be desktop computers and then laptop computers, and now it's much more of a environment strategy. You are in a work environment, and the work environment is much more expanded than it used to be, and you really need to understand how to tactically and strategically go to work in this environment. A lot can be handled with virtualization. You can virtualize application and make the data stay in the data center and provide it on the outside, but it misses the point that apps are really targeted to each device specifically. So it will never be a good consumer experience. You will be able to use it, but it will never be a long-term strategic investment. the long-term strategic investment will be to modernize all of this, just like we modernized the data center to tackle the PC. We have to modernize to tackle all of these new devices and the computerization that's handling. And that is a big, big business opportunity for you who are going out into the work field, because we're going to spend 20 years doing this, securing it and building it, because there's no stopping it. Then if you should look at a case, how this has been done in our company that I know a little bit of, we can see a little bit what this looks like in reality. Microsoft has about 20,000 Wi-Fi access points worldwide. We have about 2 million devices, I think, on the corporate network, and more than half of them are strictly managed, tightly managed. So we know what's going on and know what patch state and so on they are in. And the rest of them, we have a strategy to tackle what we present to each type of device and each type of scenario. First, it's figuring out something about the weakest link, the user, where they are and what they're doing. Then we need to automatically be able to detect what device and location they're at, and then serve them up services, apps and data that is appropriate for the respective scenario they're in. The users then are the big word in Microsoft is scenarios, and then the personas that are actors in these scenarios. So these are statistically the most significant personas in our scenarios. We have a lot of contractors who work at Microsoft, and then they bring their own devices into work, and they can't do real work without them. So providing them with really good infrastructure to be able to work on our network is very key. Project managers are probably the ones who help ship products and services on time, and then enable them to always be able to do work wherever they are is really critical, because they tend to be or define the critical paths in what gets delivered in a service company like Microsoft. Account managers sell stuff, and then enabling those are really key. And stock trader is not a Microsoft persona. It's much more on the financial side of the house, that they handle a lot of money, and so they are really important. They are not a lot of people, but they handle so much money that you really want to give them the best tools available for their business, and so on. You can figure out a lot of personas for your scenarios. The hard part with people who handle a lot of money is that they have the most compliance rules tied to them. So you really need to know what they are saying and what they are not saying about critical and sensitive information. Then you need a framework. And really, a framework is not only bring your own device or bring your own disaster. It's really bring your own X factor. And what is your own X factor? What makes you successful at work? You can set up something that gives the user something and gives the business something. So such a framework could be that you could choose your own, you could bring your own, you could just hand people something with maximum control like the military does, or you could say bring your own, which is basically the policy is you are on your own, you handle everything yourself. But then you could disable a lot of scenarios for those two. So those four building blocks is what we have used to sort of create a strategy around how we manage the information to enable this bring your own device stuff. And it really is enabling choice with bring your own device. And the policy there is you're on your own, don't call me, you know what to do, so please do it yourself. But we will only give you a subset of applications and information that is appropriate for that scenario. We will not give you business critical applications, and we will not give you business critical information. And then here's your own is the other side of the spectrum, where we actually control everything that is being given to you. So we're kind of lucky, I guess. We get pretty good devices. So this is an ARM-based device made by Microsoft right now. It's a Surface. It's sort of an iPad competitor, and then there's a lot of PCs coming out to the market these days that is also hybrid devices. You can look at them later. It's not really important right now. But it's a big specter that we can choose, say, 15, 20 devices that IT has monitored and have built images for, that we know how to patch and know how to secure and know how to monitor the software that goes on them and what services they are using. So that's sort of the choose your own scenario, where we have a short list that we can pick from, and that gives users a little less feeling of being in the military service. They get to pick from a good cafeteria menu. And then the really important piece, this is what determines the policy, and this is where the hard work begins, is in assessing the impact to the organization. There's a lot of concerns you have to take into account, and what we have done is really built a framework with red, green, and yellow, where we categorize every piece of information in the company with those three colors. So if you are creating information or accessing information, there will always be a color on the page where you're getting the information that's red, green, or yellow. And you know if it's red, that it's business critical. And that should be a warning that you should handle this with care. This is company assets, and Microsoft is still worth something north of $300 billion. So if you start leaking this information, we could be, you know, liable for a lot of money. So this is really, really, really critical, really, really valuable. The green stuff is something that you then can say is not that important and not business critical, and this can fit on any device and will also be automatically put in the garbage junk by IT. So they will have an automatic delete policy. So we'll really, really, really take care of the red stuff and then really, really have an automated policy to get rid of the green stuff. So you have to recreate that, or maybe make sure that you are managing that actively if you want to keep it around. So this then breaks down to establishing policies in all these areas for devices and for the different management aspects and for the assets that goes into this. And you, when you have that in place, you can really start working on the who, where, what of what services you have to build. So we think this is a 3 to 5 year journey for an enterprise. So when you say bring your own device, it sounds like you can go out and get one. But really for IT to get ready and implement this stuff takes 3 to 5 years if you're a big enterprise, if you have something like Statoil or the Norwegian government or say Microsoft. So this is the service portfolio you will end up with. We started off with a little scenario of users who access cloud services. How you deal with that in a scenario is through identity federation. Let's see. In this identity federation scenario is you should never enable business critical services that are not federated to your own domain. Because if you have somebody who is a crook who is accessing this service or could potentially harm the company, you can turn him off in your company directory and he will automatically fall out of any business critical service that he has been assigned to. So that is the way you give corporate administrators the legal and possibility to actually delete crooks from damaging your network. And trust me, there's a lot of contractors and people who left the company who still have access to a lot of business critical company services in today's enterprise. It's pretty Swiss cheese out there. Then on the enabling piece, enabling the social productivity is what is fueling the value piece of this and transitioning to the cloud. In Microsoft, we think that we will be able to transition to 100% cloud-based as an enterprise within 2020. And we might miss with 5% or 10% or something like that, but that is definitely the goal. So we are going 100% moving enterprise services to start building for the cloud first and operate out of the cloud and integrate all of the enterprise services to the cloud. And then have all of the access control mechanisms then be able to monitor both areas. So that is sort of a key to the design of really managing this high impact and medium impact and low impact information storage areas. Then there's one thing we haven't talked about, and that really is the biggest, most expensive piece of this, and that's re-architecting for all of these new computing devices, whether it be phones or tablets or sensors, and integrating into the existing enterprise services. And this modern application development is not the aspect of this talk, but I guess it will be. Securing the apps aspect of it will be part of the next security meeting that we are arranging together with the security managers of Norwegian companies. And it's really a tough aspect, because the next UI to all of these services are apps, and how to think about securing them and how to think about building them is what everybody is dealing with these days. Take for instance the health ministry in Norway. They are delivering sort of 30% of public services from our national budget, and a lot of those services could be delivered as apps or as services or by networked to people's or to patients' families and people who care about them. So they are actually now building 100 person organization to deliver modern apps to directly to patients. So this is a new type of thinking, and the government is doing it, and most businesses are doing it. And so to really start building this data and let person information be able to flow all the way up out into apps in sensitive information, and how to decide for this is happening today. So it's a pretty interesting area if you are interested in security and if you're interested in modernizing, you know, digitizing the Norwegian economy or the company's economy or your own economy. A little word from the sponsor. We started it all in 1972 with a PC on every desktop as a vision. It actually happened, and we continue to enable consumerization today. And we hope we have given you a few perspectives on how the consumer piece and the business piece fits together, and a little bit of the problem space. And that's about it, what I could do in 45 minutes, I think. So we'll open the floor for questions.
Thank you, Anders, for... I don't think you can do at least say many more words in 45 minutes. Lots of information, and for bringing out the importance of risk management and architecture and design aspects also from this perspective. Okay, any questions?
Okay, back to the maybe you concerned business trends, business environment for data processing strategies you have to do, like ranking the importance of data, use their colors, like red is concerning the business critical data, but who decide the importance of a particular type of data? Because now it's a big data era, and we introduced the Internet of Things, and like to use many apps and devices in the business environment, and there are so many data, it's impossible to implement it manually. So is there any strategies to do that automatically, like to introduce machine learning algorithms or something? Is there any work in Microsoft on these kind of things?
Very good question. It's been a long journey. In the beginning, we started only with stuff like blogging 10 years ago, which is a big change for Microsoft. We used to be sort of impenetrable. You couldn't tell what was going on the inside until 5,000 of our best employees started blogging, and most people know what everybody's doing. And the policy around that was be smart. So we sort of encouraged people to bring their best foot forward and show what they were doing, but use your head and don't expose the business critical stuff. So we basically pushed it all the way down to the employee, and you decide. And then legal and compliance environment has changed somewhat. So the FCC, I think, in the US actually makes employers liable for stuff that bloggers say on their blogs. So then I think the blogging policy changed to something like don't be stupid because that could be really, really expensive and you could lose your job, you know. And now we have a more diverse blogging policy. But the point is, what do you do then with really high value or really critical data mining data algorithms and what people are dealing with there? And I guess it's very hard to regulate. So it's pretty much the same information handling algorithm that goes on. It's delegated mostly to employees. We have a set of rules that are, you know, four pages or something like that. I think they're explicit. I think you can read them. You can find them on the internet. It's basically left up to the employee, and then the rest will be handled by lawyers if things go wrong, I think. And it hasn't gone so far, so the risk isn't all that high. Yes, absolutely. So even in Norway, we have 250 people who work in Microsoft Norwegian Development Center, and those are primarily algorithm people. And so I don't know anything about what their rules are in and what the software they're doing, but that could be someone we could call up and you could hear more specifically from them. But the value of what's possible with big data and with cloud computing is basically that when you get all of the information in the cloud, you could know a lot about what's going on security-wise, value-wise, with data mining algorithms. So it's a huge area for investment, both in research and development and in product development. So expect to see a lot on that side.
You talk a lot about services, but a new issue now is there's also multiple of operative systems in one enterprise. How should you handle, let's say, three different operative systems as well as a lot of services? Should you whitelist so you can only use Microsoft? Or
I think the question assumes that there is one best way. I think the right answer depends. What are you trying to protect against? What services are you talking about? What are the users? So if the value is high, you could presumably take a lot of risk. I doubt if it's 3, it's closer to 30. You know, in versions and patch levels and blah, 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 blah. And that's if you think you're homogenous, it's probably closer to 30 than to 3.
Any more questions?
Man, I must have been clear.
Okay, well, let's thank Anders again then. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
And there's still coffee outside, and Anders said that he'll be there around for a bit of chit-chatting, so yeah. Otherwise, thank you everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bare